in the Pattern Podcast. Make left traffic, clear for the option.
Line up and wait, 7 range, 4 Mike Alpha.
Mark Tower, 172, Romeo Hotel, hold code on 133, ready to take off.
Alpha Delta, 5322, I'm Mike, and I'm downwind for runway 25.
I'm John.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Mark.
And we are the In the Pattern Podcast.
All right, welcome to episode 11 of the In the Pattern Podcast. Along with me, we've got Mark in California and John again in Maryland. Mark just got back from a dual cross-country this evening, so we thought we might jump on together and get the latest and greatest info from him and learn about his cockpit resource management. I hear it's the best.
Yeah, thanks.
Tell us all about it, Mark.
Well, it was a great day to fly. The weather's been finally settling down. From the ground, it looked beautiful. Had some light winds, but once we got to the valley, the winds picked up. Before the recording, we were looking at the ground track, and it was not too bad, but it was kind of ugly in a few spots. So those that have heard that the last couple episodes, I have a new instructor, and he happens to be the chief instructor for the flight school. So, and that was strategically planned on my part because if I can pass under his watch, then I shouldn't have any problems at all when it comes time for the examiner. But so he's kind of starting to push me more. Even though it's only been our second flight, he's pushing me more to see where I need work at. And today he found it. It was he got me flustered fast. It was just simple cockpit resource management, you know, prepping for the next radio frequency or the next VOR or something simple and something stupid. And I was just like, well, where are we going to go now? Or the favorite one was he's looking around. He's all, so did we forget something? Did we miss something? I'm like,
Is that just a test in itself?
Yes,
right there?
Exactly. He
not
wants...
that you've missed anything.
Exactly. And that happened three times. And
dude,
and
that's mean.
He's like, are you sure we're ready to go? I'm like, I dialed this in. I got the next frequency. I got the VOR. I had dialed in the VOR, but I didn't dial in the radio. I'm like, idiot. Okay, there's one. But I mean, the basic flying stuff, you know, your transponder set to altitude and the fuel pump on before you take off and all that simple stuff, I had that. It's just, he's like, are you sure? And I'm like, oh, damn it. So I'm grabbing the checklist and I'm like, going through. Yeah. He's like, okay, good. I just wanted to make sure. Oh my God.
That's so mean.
Yeah, but you know what, though? It's going to make me better down the road because it's going to make me, you know, do then verify precisely.
Mm-hmm.
So.
You won't be leaving with the cover over the airspeed at pitot tube cover on like I did. And stuff.
No. Because I was doing my pre-flight and he's walking out there and he's watching me. And he's not doing it in a negative way at all. He's just watching me to see how I do things.
Right.
And he's all, where are we at on the checklist, you know? And that's his big emphasis is, you know, you live and die by the checklist, which I fully agree with. And but it's just that second guessing myself. And I'm like, God, I hate that. So the flight itself was actually pretty uneventful. The first leg was the same exact flight that I had done with him two and a half weeks ago, I think is what it was.
That was just an out and back to Chico?
Yeah. From Auburn to Chico, out and back. We transition, actually fly over Beale Air Force Base, airspace, their Class Charlie. So
was that like what we were talking about earlier?
What's that?
The top of theirs was 4,100. You were going to fly at 45.
Correct.
But you were going to be getting flight following from NorCal?
Correct. You need to because there's an active TFR in place.
Okay. Well, that's cool. So And you're crossing almost directly over top of their runway, right?
Well, on the outbound leg heading to Chico, we're pretty much west. I mean, I was just maybe a mile inside the airspace, so plenty of room for all their traffic. But on the way back, my flight plan took me directly over the center of the runway. Uh-huh. Which that was the plan, and you know, we talked about this before, and my instructor and I talked about it too. Is like, well, if they don't want you to go there, if NorCal or Oakland Center don't want you to go there, they're going to let you know. And they did. We were looking at the ground track, and they're like, Archer A321 Mike, take a heading of 140 to avoid traffic in the pattern of Beale.
Okay.
No problem. And so I hung a right. And
that's kind of like what me and you were talking about. I'm like, well, if you're going to be on with NorCal, then I don't know if they're specifically talking with Beale or if they've just, you know, of course they've got radar in the area.
Yep.
So they did their job and just... Yep.
Yeah, and it really was something simple, and that ended up becoming a learning lesson or a learning moment, because my instructor he showed me what you should know as a VFR pilot, but it's also something later on down the road when you're an instrument pilot. It's when you're on your heading, and they vector you to another heading, you start your timer, boom, okay, you're now, what was the swing? And for me, it was 20 degrees, and he goes, okay. When they say you can resume your own course, how many degrees are you going to come back to reintercept your course? And I was like, you know, it's a pop quiz question. And I'm starting to think about it. I'm like, well, it should be double my deviation. So it should be 40. He goes, yep, that's exactly what it is. So we're going to time it from the time that you deviated to the time that they tell you can go back. So it was like 2.5 minutes. And then so I take a left-hand turn, 40 degrees, and until we track the, you know, my original course, and we were right back on, you know, within reason. I mean, the winds were picking up and stuff, but that was something I had never even thought of. He goes, now you know what to do next time. If they change you, this is what you do to get back on course. He goes, if everything else fails and you're just doing dead reckoning, this is how you do it.
Cool.
So I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. So,
yeah.
So the like I said, the first leg was pretty uneventful. We landed at Chico and made a call. The only difference this time was I had a straight in approach. The previous winds were different by 180 degrees, so I ended up having to jump in the pattern, and we did right hand traffic. Jumped in the pattern, called the tower midfield, gave us clearance to land, dropped in, taxi back. Reset everything. Of course, I got the, are you sure you've done everything? So, second guess myself again. I'm like, yeah, I got the frequencies. He's like, well, and one of my standby frequency was to call Oakland Center, who we had just been talking to before we got to Chico. And he goes, the next airport's only 20 miles away. We're not going to get up high enough. Do you think you're going to talk to Oakland Center? Probably not, because I planned only getting up like 1,500 feet. And I'm like, probably not. He's like, well, what frequency should you put in here then? Unicom for the other field? He's all, there you go. So, you know, he's making me think. It's like, you know, the logical steps. So it was a lot of things that I need to learn. And I have started recording, doing the audio recording in the cockpit again. So I've got the last lesson and this lesson to go back and listen to do a ton of chair flying and take a lot of notes. And so hopefully the next lesson, probably next week, will be a long day and a long night. That one I hope is better. So, but then
it will be.
Yeah, so I think once I get comfortable flying with him, because he kind of has the stigma with students that, you know, he's the big bad chief instructor, and this is the guy that, you know, he's your mock check ride, and he's going to be hard on you. And so I have to get over that, because he's a really nice guy. We laugh and joke, and, you know, on the ground, but when we're in the cockpit, it's business, and I really, really appreciate that. So I've got to get over that, you know, you're mm-hmm. The bad guy, or not a bad guy. That's not what I mean to say, but you know,
the hard ass.
They're the hard ass, you know. And I actually, so he goes, I have a habit of or a history of people calling me a hard ass, and I'm like, you know what? That's exactly why I wanted you to fly with me or to teach me. So, but anyway, The flight back on the way home was, again, pretty uneventful. We were back at 3,500 feet, and it just caught some gusts of wind here and there. Talked to NorCal approach again, and first she was not acknowledging me because I think she could tell I was a student pilot. So my instructor jumps on and he starts calling out. What are they called? They're the IFR checkpoints. So if you're on a Victor Airway, every so often you'll see these checkpoints. That'll be some weird name. Mm-hmm. So he jumps on real quick and he says, we're at the certain point, and she pops right back on and says, okay, you squawk such and such, 0333, your own navigation, blah blah blah. And the difference, the reason I got instant attention and you didn't, because she was busy, is that he came on and she could tell that he was a commercial pilot, because just the way he was speaking and the tone of his voice. And so it was like, as soon as he talked, it was like, okay, no problem, got our squawk, got our business. Here's me, student Joe, student pilot.
Hey, that's the person that needs the help the most. Get back to me.
Exactly, but
not the pro. He's gonna get things figured out eventually.
Exactly. This guy can do it in his sleep. I'm the one that needs a little help. But yeah,
because
I make the initial call and she's like, Archer 8321, Mike, you are well outside of my airspace. Give me a call back in about 20 miles. I'm like, oh, that sucked. He's like, no problem. He's all, we'll call back at this certain point. And that's when I tried to call back, and I were closer and I could really hear the radio traffic, and she was busy. There's a lot of traffic that she was handing off into Sacramento International and transition into SFO and Oakland. So she was busy, but it was pretty cool. I learned different things, how she handles traffic, you want to sound like a pro and you get treated like a pro, that's how you do it. So
I love the flight following.
Oh, I do too. I do too. Traffic, you're whatever they're calling. Don't even have to look around. It's like,
That's in-flight entertainment for me.
Yeah.
it's just something to listen to. It's like me sitting at work here at my desk and, I've got up live ATC or,
exactly.
I listen a lot to my home airport of Deer Valley on Squawk VFR.
I wish I could do that.
And I hear a lot of the airplanes that I know by their tail names. I hear them in the pattern and stuff, and it's just fun because you can visualize in your head because you're familiar with the area, so you know what's going on. You can just
sure.
It's like someone reading a story to you.
And that's what's funny is my instructor had three students before me, so he was, you could tell Bo had a long day, and he's kind of like just leaning over on the side. He's just glancing out, looking around at the out his side of the window, and I'm listening to NorCal approach on the radio. I'm like, she's busy.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Oh, cool. We've got such and such plane coming in,
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, oh, and there was one call. It was an airline that I hadn't heard out here in a long time. And I was like, wow. It was like at least in my airspace, a Lufthansa or something like that. I'm like, wow. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Cool. So
That's who my buddy Todd used to teach for. That he worked at Goodyear he worked for a flight school over at Goodyear Airport, teaching the Lufthansa students.
Very cool.
German airline.
So, yeah. So the last part of my third leg there was, we actually were able to, once she said resume on navigation, we were literally right over the south end of Beale's runway. Had a great view of the whole place and cruised around one of my checkpoints, body of water right there, and hung a slight right and then headed for home. And then I was home free. I knew what to do from then on. But I have a lot of work to do as far as the management side. But
the first two, three are really hard. I found that the solos helped a lot because I got to use the seat next to me.
Right.
I couldn't agree more.
and then just having the time to on my own kind of figure it out, because you're not worried about talking to him or anything like that. You're worried about just flying you, the airplane, making sure you get there.
Right.
And you have a little bit more time without feeling rushed. Like when you're at the run up area, I noticed that I took a lot more time my first cross country solo, just sitting there with the radios and just double checking everything.
Right.
So okay. I don't know, my cross country, my solos cross countries, I felt a lot better with.
Yeah. I liked the solos too. Of course I'd made my duels so darn long and I was hitting through, you know, four or five airports and one cross country that I made too much out of it, you know, for my first time anyway. So by the time
your own fault.
Yeah, it was, I didn't realize, you know, she let me plan all my own stuff, you know, where I wanted to go instead of here, plan us a flight to this airport or that airport. She goes, oh, wherever you want to go, just plan it out and let me see it. And let's
wow.
go over it.
And that's you know, I tell you what though, I mean, you learned a lot there.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I had kind of a, we're going here, we're going here. You just planned to this place, which wasn't bad, but you know, I didn't get a chance to really go where I wanted to really go until I got my license.
Yeah. At this point, within Maricopa County, I think there's only two airports I haven't been to yet. And, well, one of them's private and the other one's just so small. I just haven't decided to go there yet, but it's on the list. Might as well knock it out.
It's one of the cool things that that Bo was telling me. He's like, when you go to do your solo, he goes, I'm going to give you a destination. And he goes, he points over towards the coast. And I'm like, he goes, I might send you over that ridge line over there. I'm like, what? Where? And he says, I may send you to Santa Rosa. And I'm like, sweet, I'd go to Santa Rosa. I have friends at Santa Rosa. My friend Will Whiteside, who flies, he's the pilot of Voodoo.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he's based out of there. And I'm like, sweet, I'll just call up Will and say, hey, want to do lunch or something? And so.
Yeah, that's what I always tried to get going was, it's like, all right, I want to go here. And I just like scrambling, trying to find people that can like meet up with me, make have some fun with it, you know?
And right down the road, actually, Lesser is Napa. And I have to do three full stops at taxi backs at a controlled airport solo, and I'm like, well, just send me to Napa. And he's like, well, that's a great idea. Well, my wife's uncle lives, he's a large animal vet right there in Napa, and he goes, give me a call, we'll come have lunch, you know?
There you go.
Nice.
So yeah. I'm kind of hoping for that.
You got some incredible places to fly up there in NorCal, man. It's just the scenery is just incredible.
Absolutely. I can't wait to stretch my legs and get out and go see stuff.
One of these days I'm going to make it out there to fly.
You should. You know what? That that airport that Carlene Pettit sent to us up in Washington, I really want to go up and see that.
Yeah, it was very nice looking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like little airports like that tucked away. They're like these little hidden gems.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all over the place. You just have to, you know, do a little research, I guess.
And what airport was that again? What was the
I knew you were gonna ask. I don't have Twitter up to
I got it.
I had to ask. It's a podcast. We gotta let the listeners know what we're talking about.
Sequim Valley. Sequim.
In Washington. Does it have the you have the identifier there?
Sequim Valley Airport.
Whiskey 28.
That sounds right.
I'm seeing Whiskey 28.
Okay. Yes, it is. Whiskey 28.
There you go. So, listeners, if you're in the Northwest, go visit that airport.
For sale, 20 and 40-acre parcels on Sequim Valley Airport with runway access.
Nice. Nah, that's one of my dreams.
All right,
there.
Moving out there.
Wait, 20 and 40-acre parcels? You can make your own a damn airport with 40 acres. Come on. Oh, wow.
Now, let me have the go-kart track in the backyard.
There you go.
And hangar space for my jet.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. Place to park your L39.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or the one that I was looking at, which is a kit, is the Viper jet.
Oh, yeah. That thing's incredible. I can't imagine someone owning those.
I actually had an RC model of that thing, and it was badass.
I've seen one of those.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, though. The one plane I really like to have is a T6.
Yeah.
We have three of them on our airport.
I'm jealous. But
there's all kinds of L-39s over there at Deer Valley. Someone's bought a bunch of them and refurbing them and selling them, I guess. There's
like, you know,
10 or 12 of them sitting outside all the time.
I have noticed that the two of you have a lot more variety of planes at your airports.
Oh my gosh. When I went to Livermore to visit Mark Pollard, which mm-hmm. we never did hook up because he was out instructing at the time. I go into their, they have one main major hangar. It had like eight aircraft in it. There was an L-39, a Bonanza, a really sweet Bonanza, a couple of Pitts, a T-6. I mean, all kinds of stuff. And they're like, oh, that's not all we have. They take me around to the side, which is perpendicular to it. And they're like, we have stuff in these two. And there was Cubs and I think an Aronca Champ and a couple of Marchettis. And I'm just like, you guys are killing me. This is awesome. And as I'm there, standing there with my daughter out in front of the big hangar, a P-51 and a P-40 come in for landing.
Oh, nice.
I'm like, can it get any better than this, you know?
Yeah, that's not bad at all.
So, yeah.
Mm. I just, whenever I'm at my airport, it's, you know, you see all the biz jets sitting there on the ramp. There's usually, like, a Cirrus, a bunch of 172s and hangars and stuff like that, but for the most part, the only planes I generally see are biz jets, a few twin engines, you know, 172, 182. I mean, we have a few diamonds. And then there's like one Pitts and a Satabria. But I generally don't see a lot of the, like, you know, T6s, L39, stuff like that. There's not a lot of other stuff that I don't know. Maybe it'll come out in the summer. We'll see, but I'm just kind of jealous because you guys get a lot more cool planes.
Right now out at Deer Valley is Fifi, the B-29. Cool. It's back out there. I think today was its last day, I think, and it's taken off again. And then they also brought in the Commemorative Air Force, has a base over in Mesa, and so they flew over to be with Fifi, the B-17 and a B-25 Mitchell that we have here locally. So we see those all the time. But nice. Fifi's kind of cool because that's, you know, a rarity. There's only one of them.
Well, it's coming to Oshkosh. I'm excited.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I want to have, like, the rides I really want right now. Obviously, we heard T-6. Love to have a ride in one of those. B-17 or B-29, like any of just a World War II bomber.
I can't believe the amount of money they want for a 30-minute ride in one of those things.
It's pretty.
Do you know the operating cost?
Oh, it's a loser. They can't.
I mean, they burn 100 gallons an hour, and they buy oil by like the 5-gallon jugs.
Yeah,
that's why governments ran them.
Yeah, it's $400-something for a 30-minute flight or whatever. But yeah, you're right. There's no way they recoup. Near enough money to cover their costs, because even just getting it to and from one airport is way more money than they ever recouped just in all the days that they flew it at that airport and sold rides, because even each one of those rides they probably lost. I mean, just horrendous.
Well, I really wanted to do a ride last year at Oshkosh. You know, it's kind of hard to come up with $300 to $350 to do it.
Yeah.
So one day I'm going to get one of those, and then I want to fly a Cub so bad. So bad. Yeah, I'm going to accomplish that soon. But there's none around here.
God, really? They're all over here. Matter of fact, I had one that was just refurbished, a Clipwing Super Cub, jump in front of me in the pattern tonight. And it was funny, my instructor, he knew the guy who bought the plane, and it's a gorgeous red, white, and blue. He goes, okay, we're coming up on you fast. And he's like, he makes his call. He's all, I'm on the downwind and I'm pouring the coals to it, you know. a Cub, it's 60-mile-an-hour takeoff, 60-mile-an-hour cruise, 60-mile-an-hour landing speed.
That's right.
That's all you get.
I can go over to Chandler and get a tailwell endorsement in one.
Very cool.
So it's either that or a Citabria, or maybe it's a Decathlon. I'm not sure. Which it would be will be on the short list as soon as I get my ticket. I think I'll go ahead and knock that out.
I still haven't decided what I'm doing.
It just seems like more of the planes that I really want to fly after I get my license, more of the planes that I really want to like be a partner in are going to end up being tailwheels.
Interesting.
I really want to build a tailwheel. I will. Yeah. That and I'm definitely getting it. It's just a matter of when I can afford to do it, because I got all this flight training debt to pay off now, and then on top of that I still want to keep currency. So it's like keeping currency is really hard money wise
yeah.
I'm just like, I'm sitting here and I'm like, I have no idea how I'm gonna fly more than once. Like, even once a month I want to do, and I don't know how I'm going to do that. Because that's like $200 a month going to flying.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, I got to pay off my flight train. I'm like...
You just need a better
job. I need to...
And marry a nurse. Well,
yeah. Well, there's not much I can do about the better job at the moment, but I need to get some cheaper rentals. So, I'm looking into that.
It's 150 time.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about getting checked out in the Diamond. That's like 110 an hour.
That's not too bad.
And I kind of want to fly because, you know, number one, you know me, I haven't flown a low wing before.
Shame on you.
So I want to try a low wing, and I like it because it's the bubble canopy and it's the joystick.
Yeah, that's the thing that gets me is that stick.
Cool.
Again, going back to plane I want to fly, tailwheel and stick.
Yeah.
It's just that to me feels like it should be a real airplane, you know, like it's just like, you know, it's closer to everything that's, you know, a fighter jet or whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say, it sounds more like you should be flying like a Super D or something then.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? I even consider like, I want, you know, maybe about buying, you know, being a partner in a Citabria or a Super D or something like that. But the only thing I don't like is that tandem seating.
Yeah.
I'm not a big fan of that at all.
Yeah, but you know what?
And you have to sit in the back if you're a single pilot. You know, or either way, if you're the pilot, you sit in the back because of CG. You don't sit up front.
But that plane is about having fun. That plane is about going up on Sunday afternoons and doing some aerobatics.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know? I mean, how often are you really gonna have somebody else in that plane?
I know. Thing is, I want to find something that covers all those grounds, you know.
Just go get a Pitts.
Yeah.
Build a Sonax. Build a Sonax.
4-seat Pitts.
There you go.
I'll have the first 4-seat Pitts biplane ever.
So you need a new standard.
Yeah, I'm going to have to design my own damn plane.
Isn't it the new standard that has the four-person bench seat in the front and then the pilot in the back?
That's funny.
I think they fly them. It's the one I saw at Fantasy of Flight. They had one of those, and then they had a steerman.
Mm. Yeah.
Actually, if I go back down anytime in the near future and go to there, I'm getting a biplane ride.
I hear it's well worth it.
Mm-hmm. You ever heard of the Delta Dyke?
Yeah, I've seen a bunch of them at Oshkosh.
Oh yeah,
two or three of them.
Yeah, there isn't a whole lot of them to start with, but so pilot up front, 3 seats in the back.
Hmm.
So those are pretty cool. Yeah. So speaking of other airplanes, I got my my first chance to fly not my first chance to fly in a high wing, but. You know, I told you guys that Bill Williams was going to take me up in the 182, so he flew over to Deer Valley and picked me up in that. I told you guys about that, but we didn't talk about it on the last episode, did we?
No.
Just that I think I was going at that point.
Yeah.
So I'd flown in a high wing before because my buddy Dean's got the little Cessna 140. But that one, of course, you sit shoulder to shoulder in. But the 182 is like, you know, it's like a big old Cadillac or something. You know, there's just tons of room in it. As a matter of fact, I guarantee you could be 7 foot tall and be comfortable in that plane in the front seats, because with the seat all the way back, my legs are better than a foot and a half away from the pedals.
Wow.
They just tons of room. And so with a regular size pilot in there, anywhere from, I'd say, probably 5'8" to 6 foot or whatever, the backseat passengers have tons of leg room. So
is there a space between the two seats up front?
Well, it's not a bench.
No, well, I know it's not a bench. I know they're individual seats. I'm saying, how big is the space between the two seats?
Oh, like a regular car console, like a console would fit between there or whatever, you know?
See, I'm jealous already.
Yeah, there's like, I don't know.
Because the 172, you can fit your hand if you smush it between the seats, but there's no like open room necessarily.
Oh, okay.
And I have an issue in the plane that I fly where actually the newer one, Two Romeo Hotel, where the seat belts, because they clip on the inside there, they actually get the box for them. They get tangled on each other. So you actually can't move the seat back or forward unless you move the box back and kind of like wiggle it.
Okay.
Because the seats are literally just like against each other. And I was reading something where I heard it was like a 4-inch. It was 4 inches wider than the 172. And I was just like, oh, man.
Well, I was thinking 4 to 6 inches somewhere in between there. It was.
I need to get me some time. I need to get me a complex and get a 182.
So that was, yeah, that was my first time, though, in a complex and a high-performance airplane.
Is it high-performance?
What's the engine? 230 horse.
Oh, damn.
IO540. So, wow. So Bill showed me, he goes, all right, so, you know, we have the prop all the way in for takeoff. We're at climb mode, you know, give it the gas, you know, and you get up to, you know, you get up 500-600 feet or whatever. And then, all right, and now reduce the throttle and you move the pitch back, and so now you're at like 24 inches of mercury there on the manifold pressure, and you're about 2400 rpm, something like that, on the motor, on the rpm, and so that was kind of cool. So I kind of learned about, you know, what you need to do as you're getting ready for landing and stuff, and setting it back up and taking off. So that was my first time messing around with that, so that was really cool. Power-wise, though, between that and the Archer that I fly, the only difference is that 182 is going to be able to probably maintain a faster speed or something with more people in it. But really, it's only about probably no more than 12 to 15 miles per hour faster at the most.
What were you cruising?
What's that? How fast?
What were you cruising? Yeah.
Oh, we weren't really even doing much of that, because we just went from Deer Valley over to Glendale Airport and then Goodyear, which are not far. So we weren't really doing much more than about 100 knots anyways.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we weren't picking it up to its full speed or anything.
Because, I mean, I think you get a pretty good speed improvement over the 172 in addition to the useful load.
Yeah, that's the thing. This thing would haul a ton. It's got a nice big baggage space in it. And so he flew over from his home airport, which, well, actually, he's part of a club that owns two 172s and a 182. And the 182 that he brought over, I mean, looked like new. I mean, it was really, really just, I think the paint job was only like 3 or 4 years old, so it looked really pretty. Yeah. Flew good, and he had never been to Glendale or Goodyear, so I worked the radios and stuff and helped him with the navigation, and we went over there and did some touch and goes, and then I flew it back from Goodyear a portion of the way and got us into the pattern and down to short final and gave it back to him, and he landed it. So it was a little different. You know, the only thing for me was looking out for traffic. I'm just so used to having that space up above to see out that I feel I have a better feel for where traffic is when someone says, you know, traffic at such and such, because they tend to be out in front of you or slightly above. Of course, at the altitudes we were at least. We weren't at a height. We weren't at very high altitudes.
Yeah, so, you got to start looking around the wing, like up front, like you're leaning up, like head plastered against the dashboard, trying to look around, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, dipping the wings up to see around and stuff.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Just something different to get used to. I'm just more comfortable in the low wing for that particular thing.
Yeah, I'm very intrigued to get some time in the low wing.
Yeah. You guys have some Cherokees there or whatever to rent?
There is an Aero, but it's a little more expensive and complex, and I don't have the money to get the complex right now. I've been debating on
retracts.
I think so. I think it is retrack and prop.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm going to do. I may look into Frederick, because I'm actually not far from Frederick Airport either.
Mm-hmm.
They're both kind of similar distance. Actually, Frederick may actually be closer than Martin. So I don't know. We'll see. I gotta see what I can get myself into this summer.
The other thing that was different for me that you're used to, John, and Mark and I aren't, is that so on the Archer for the throttle and the mixture, we have just throttle levers that you're pushing forward and backwards, you know.
That sounds dangerous.
Like a T, right?
Yeah.
Sounds dangerous.
And so you've got these, like, I'm going to call them plungers or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
So you've got these knobs that you're pushing in and out. And then, and we've seen this before from other pilots, and I never really figured it out, but like on the mixture, for example, so you have a button and you kind of put your two fingers around the end of it and push in with your thumb, and you can push it in and out, right? Or you can twist it. Right?
You've heard me say three half turns, right?
Yeah. So that's
how I start the plane. Yeah,
the incremental thing, right? So you can incrementally just wind it back out like a screw.
Because honestly, the last thing you want to do when you're in the air is start pushing and pulling on that mixture knob.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you want to slowly just twist it and, you know, twist a few times, wait for a response, you know, because you don't want to choke the engine while you're 4,000 feet, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. So in the Archer, it's just a lever forward, backwards, you know, and so that was a little different. Learning how that works and understanding that a little better.
It's really natural. Like I'm
sure it is for you.
It is. I don't know. I don't. That lever thing scares me, man.
It's simplistic.
It's very simplistic. It's like a throttle quadrant in a big jet.
Yeah, but how much force does it take to move it?
Nothing. Because there's also a tensioner on there.
So yeah, there's a friction lock.
Yeah.
There is a friction lock on it, too. Okay, because there is a friction lock on the knobs, you know, right on the...
Throttle? For the throttle?
On the throttle. There's
I don't know that the friction lock does anything for the mixture part of it, but it might.
No, well...
I don't know.
Well, there isn't a friction lock on, at least on the 172 Zyfly either. It's just on the throttle. But I don't know. I just feel like I like accidentally do something like the mixture or something like that and shut the plane off.
Yeah. So on the left-hand side's the throttle, the right-hand side's the mixture, you know, and it says throttle, it's spelt out, and then it says mixture. And, for starting up the airplane, I bring the mixture back to the top of the T on the word mixture, M-I-X-T. That's where it sits. And for throttle, I bring it up from the from the bottom up to the T where it says starts the word throttle. And that's where my positions are, where I know where to start the plane.
See, we do pull the throttle out and push it in about a quarter inch. So I know just by pushing my index finger out, you know, I can gauge what it is, hold it in my hand, and then push it in till the you know, my finger hits the dashboard.
There you go.
So I know where that is. And then the mixture, you pull it all the way out and then you twist it 3 half turns.
There you go. And on yours, the plane you flew in was fuel injected, right?
Yes.
I've done carb though. Oh, okay. So did you ever have to prime it to start, you know?
Well, when I flew, I did have to with the carb ones I flew, which were 80s, 172 P's, I believe, when I flew at freeway. And then the fuel injector ones that I have now, you actually,
turn the boost pump
on. The fuel pump on, mm-hmm. Push the mixture all the way in until you see fuel flow, mm-hmm. And then shut the fuel pump off, pull the mixture out, do the 3 half turns, and then you're good.
Oh.
So we do that every time, pretty much, unless we just started it.
Well, the R-Tri-Flay has you know that panel above that you've seen, and it's push button start. So you have you got your electrics on and everything, and you got the fuel pump on, and then there's a primer electric switch, and I just hold it in for 3 seconds and let go, and then start. And that's how that works.
I have a manual primer on mine. It's like a syringe type deal.
Yeah,
it's on the panel, but I mean you hear it when you pull it out, you hear that.
Oh yes.
And you gotta wait a second before you push it back in.
Yeah. Today was the first time in a year that I've ever had to use it.
Yeah, I only did that once, and it was, I forget why. It was really cold that day or something. I don't know.
Engines have a mind of their own.
Yeah. Oh, I had one solo cross country. I don't know if I flooded it or what, but I could not get that engine started for 10 minutes. And I'm sitting there thinking, well, I'm not going to be able to do my long cross country today. Great. and I let it sit for a while and then finally got it going. But man, that was interesting.
That's brutal.
Yeah, it was annoying. So I have not been flying. I plan on going in May. I don't think I'm going to hit up before then, though, because of the shuttle launch that I'm going down to see. But I am planning on going with a friend of mine. We're actually doing this whole weekend thing where we're going shooting on Friday. And then we're going flying on Saturday. And then we're just going to have a big party Saturday night. So it's going to be awesome.
That's a good weekend, right?
I was going to say, man, that's a full weekend. Just don't put it all together.
Yeah, well, that's why we planned it way we did, and we're doing the party. we're doing the party the night after the.
Bring the guns in the plane just to spite TSA. That's all I'm saying. And if you want,
TSA.
With a cooler in the back seat.
Yeah, shoot it right out the window.
Hey man, I fly with a pocket knife every time. Just saying.
I have other men on my flight back.
And nail clippers.
So we're doing we're going to go somewhere and grab lunch, I think. So I'm really looking forward to that because I'll be able to get back in the plane again. The only thing I've noticed recently is I don't know what got me started on it. I was reading something or I forget what it was. It was about emergency procedures or something like that. And I realized that in the situation I'm in now where I'm not flying, I'm not training all the time. You know, I'm not constantly being reminded of it. And I was reading something with emergency procedures and I realized that I didn't quite remember as quickly the checklists. And, I realized that I've lost a lot of some of the knowledge, and I'm starting to get into that whole, you know, what is it?
If you don't
lose currency, but not proficiency.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you don't start using it, you lose it type of deal.
Yeah. So I, in the position where I got to be real careful about, you know, open up the emergency section and read it every once in a while, you know, go over all the different stuff. And now I'm really starting, cause you know, before you're kind of like, you go over the checklist, but you know, everything on the checklist. You know, you do it so much. Yeah, I can see where now I'd forget a whole bunch, a whole list of them, you know, if I tried to do it by memory. So I'm really starting to see the importance of the checklist now. So there's a few little things like that that I'm starting to notice that I need to be more aware of every time I go flying. It's not as, you know, oh, I know how to do that. I don't have to worry about that as much because I've been flying 3 days a week. So,
yep, you can't be too careful.
Yeah,
I had that with not flying for 3 weeks. You get back in the plane, you're like, huh,
yeah.
See, 3 weeks to me, when I did a lot and then I got back into a lot, 3 weeks didn't faze me as much.
Sure.
Once
I got moving, everything was okay. Boom, 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 boom. But it was that initial okay. That I grab the checklist and go line by line just to make sure. Okay, now I'm good. And what you do anyway, but
I don't know. I've always done better on like 3 week or like a month break. when I trained, every time I came back after like a couple week break, I was always, that was like my best flight. It's really weird.
It gave you just enough time to forget all your bad habits?
I guess. I don't know. But there's the more important things now, because, you know, before, back when I was doing that, I mean, I was relying on my instructor a little more for some of the stuff. And now that I'm actually the one in charge, you know, I'm going to be the PIC. I need to know these things. And I was sitting there thinking, well, if I was in an emergency situation, would I be able to act quick enough? You know, would that mental checklist be there if I'm at 1,000 feet, my engine quits, you know?
Right.
Like, can I safely get the plane down? So one of those things I'm going to keep up on is reading that chapter in the POH and you know, definitely before each flight, I'll probably even put this in my checklist, go over those checklists, you know, and make sure that I have reviewed them that right before that flight.
Well, it's not a bad thing every 6 months or so, grab an instructor and throw them in the plane and all right, we're going to just go in the pattern. I want you to be here with me or go for a quick ride somewhere.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting now that I'm out training all the time, but I kind of want to get back into training. Not going to lie. Okay, I can wait to get my license now or my certificate. And now I'm like,
start that IFR.
Man, all right. Yeah. Let's see. I want to do IFR. I want to do the tailwheel. I want to get my float plane. I kind of want to do gliders. I want to get my complex.
You screwed it up by going too fast, leaving us in the dust. We're all having fun and stuff, and no, it's
But I get to take almost everyone, you know, a bunch of family members now. So
yeah, you're ahead of the game there.
My girlfriend doesn't bug me as much about the money I spend on flying now that she knows how cool it is. And now that my mom isn't worried as anything, because now she thinks it's really awesome and she wants to go again.
Oh, so good.
It works that well. So I'm excited because my friend is really, really excited. He's always kind of wanted to do it as well, get his license. It's just like I know he can't, you know, he's never been able to afford it either. So that's going to be a really cool flight because he's really excited for it. So I'm excited to be able to take him up.
Yeah, that's what it's all about right there, man.
Yeah.
Getting other people excited about it with you.
Anyways, I think we can go for some shout-outs here, right?
Yep.
Wrap it up. Anything else?
Anything?
Nope.
I think we can go for an hour.
No, I think that's about it.
Cool. Well, I know I sent out a shout out to Mark last week. Not last week. Yeah, last week. We'll make it sound like we do this weekly.
the not so weekly podcast. Yeah.
I just got another email from him. He's chugging along. So good to hear that he's still going. He switched instructors again. He's starting to sound like me. And apparently y'all are. But I'll be looking to hear from him that he's about ready to take his check ride. So keep it up. And yeah. Also, we've gotten a bunch of
mail
comments on the blog.
Yes.
Too. And some good stuff. So I don't have it all in front of me right now, but I know episode 10, episode 7 has a few. So y'all should check them out and read them because there's some good stuff there, especially about spouses and flying and money. That was a good good comment there. So
I have to go check that out.
Yeah, check out our check out the blog comments because people are posting. So post more.
Awesome.
I will let it through. Promise. Oh, and everyone, all our new followers on Twitter, thank you. I will get the following back soon. I try to do it at least once a month, but sometimes I'm slow. Sorry.
How about you, Chris?
Just a quick shout out to Bill Will, Bill Williams, Bill Will on Twitter. Thanks for the flight in the 182. That was a blast. I have to do it again sometime. He had brought up going up to Payson and doing a camping trip. Apparently, you can camp right on the airport at the end of the runway. So I think I got to get some of those big white cards with the numbers 1 through 0 on them so we can go up there and judge some landings over a weekend. Maybe that sounds like a good time. Who else? Mark Newman. He's been like John said on the blog, giving some feedback and stuff. I appreciate that. And Chris Muncy, one of our loyal followers, always hitting us up for the next episode. Thanks for your support. One other thing, what was it? Thanks for everybody who listened to episode 10 and didn't dog me too much about my stomach issues, as it were. So, Mark, you're up.
Okay. Yeah, I was last weekend. I was in Denver on a business trip, and this time I did get a chance to hook up with Nate, Denver pilot, and his wife Karen. We actually met up for dinner, and we sat around and talked for, gosh, a good couple hours. Really good people. Had a really good time. And then we ended up closing down the restaurant, and then probably stood outside in the rain and snow there for probably another 45 minutes until we were all just shivering so much we couldn't even stand it. But thank you again, Nate and Karen, for your hospitality, and I look forward to seeing you guys again. Really, really good people.
All right. Mr. Gumps himself.
That's right.
It's also a blog comment. Go check it out. Also, one more shout out to another. We have a lot of Marks that listen. I think your show is full of Marks. It's kind of weird. We had another Mark from Ireland send us an email, saying he prioritizes us over other podcasts. So thank you very much for that. I'll say we're not worthy.
Absolutely not, but thank you.
I wish I had the sound effect board from the Plane Crazy Down Under. But
yeah.
Yeah,
exactly. We're not worthy.
But he's a student pilot in Dublin, and he said he scheduled 13 flights and only been able to fly on 5 occasions because of weather. So just a shout out to him to hang in there, and you'll get some good weather.
And thanks for following.
Yeah,
and listening.
And I forgot to bring it up. Mark and I, I'm sorry, John and I got to be a part of the Not at Sun and Fun podcast with Stephen Force and Pilot Will and Bill Will and Falcon 124. These guys from down under. That was really cool. Although I only got to stay on for about an hour, I had to check out. But that was pretty cool.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that was a blast.
It's a really good conversation. I know Airspeed Steve Tepper released it, so go check that out, because it was it's a good 2 hours of some quality content, especially on the, you know, state of the industry, getting new people involved, getting more women pilots. We covered a lot of topics, and it was a really good discussion.
Yeah, sounds a blast. Going to take over the airwaves of the Sun and Fun Radio. That was cool.
And make fun of Dave. During the breaks, when he couldn't talk back to us.
Yeah, yeah. It was a one-way conversation.
That was good.
Anywho.
Makes me really, oh, so excited for Oshkosh. It's starting to get warmer here, you know. It was a good 70 degrees today. It was 80 the other day. It was really weird. I don't know what that was about.
Blustery.
And then it dropped down. And then it dropped down to, like, you know, 40. But I think it's supposed to be like 55 tomorrow. I don't know. But it's starting to get warmer. And as soon as it starts getting warmer, now I'm starting to think, well, that means summer's coming soon. And summer means Oshkosh. And yes. Yeah. So I'm getting all giddy already. I'm just excited.
Good thing to be excited about.
Yeah.
You can reach all of us at In the Pattern Podcast at podcast@inthepatternpodcast.com. On Twitter is In the Pattern. It's my transponder group for In the Pattern Podcast. And lastly, you can find us on iTunes as In the Pattern Podcast. You can reach me, John, at john@inthepatternpodcast.com. Or on Twitter and my transponder as Pilot Conway.
Chris?
Yeah, you can find me at chris@inthepatternpodcast.com as well. On Twitter at CHOLUBAZ, that's CHOLUBAZ. And my transponder is also CHOLUBAZ. And Mark?
Yeah, you can find me at mark@inthepatternpodcast.com, student pilot Mark on Twitter, and M. Lacoste on my transponder. Give us a shout.
And lastly, if you'd like, you can leave us a text message or a voicemail. The phone number is 707-PCAST-01. That's 707-PAPA-CHARLIE-ALPHA-SIERRA-TANGO-01.
Well, that wraps up this episode of the In the Pattern Podcast. I'd like to thank you all for listening. Remember, make left traffic. You're cleared for the option.
And other great shows at the Aviation Podcast Network.
TheVoicesInYourHead.com.
The members of the In the Pattern Podcast are participating as private individuals. Their comments do not necessarily reflect the views of the various organizations they work with, the instructors they learn from, or the flight schools they attend. Remember, these guys are student pilots, so anything you hear on this podcast that sounds like advice on an aircraft operation is obviously from the perspective of student pilot. You should always consider your own situation, consult your instructor, remember your training, and fly the airplane. Cleared for the option.